Hey, everybody, it's the What If Podcast.
Hello.
But it's also not the What If Podcast.
Hello.
We've got a very special drop on the feed today. Friends of the show who you may have heard as guests on the show, either on the Patreon or on the normal free show, have joined together to create their own podcast. Max Salim and Nick Mested have created a show called The Oscar Went To, where they go geek out on movies and the years that certain things came out. They see what movies lasted, which ones didn't. They talk about good movies and bad movies. And you know what? They're intelligent, funny movie buffs, and they're buds of the show.
They both have just awesome voices.
Oh, I mean, you want to talk about like cats that should be making voiceover dollars in this universe?
Not us.
Both of
those
them.
Two?
Not us. And look, if you listen to our voices, you should be psyched to listen to these voices. So, yeah. So what we did here was we guested on their show and we had a really fun conversation about, you'll never guess, Harry Potter. Harry Potter. Check it out. If you want to hear something new, you can go search for The Oscar Went To with Nick Mested and Max Salim on any of the places you listen to pods. But to give yourself a little bit of a taste, just keep it rolling. And we had a good time and give it a listen.
I bet this intro music's going to be sweet.
Oh, I wonder who did it. Oh shit, you gotta listen and find out. All right, love y'all. Have fun.
Hello, and welcome to The Oscar Went To, the podcast that looks back at a year in film and sees what films endured, what films didn't, and attempts to figure out why. Please give it up for your masters of ceremony, Max Salim and Nick Mested.
I'm glad we started recording.
Okay.
It's been another episode of Nick Reads His Email.
It's just silent. Okay. All right, here we go. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Oscar Went To. This week we have a very special episode. I'm Nick Mested. Max, say hello.
I'm Max. Hello. But we have, for the first time in the history of our unlistened to podcast, we have two guests.
Yes, they are.
Hey,
who is that?
Who are you?
The host of the wonderful, successful, and interesting, and endlessly listenable podcast, the What If Podcast. Ryan Copperud and Spencer Worth Davis join us today. Welcome, Ryan and Spencer.
It's an absolute delight to be here.
Thanks.
How are
guys.
You all?
We are well. We're all friends, and we're very excited to do a kind of Flintstones meet the Jetsons-esque episode of our two podcasts. Ooh. Together.
Oh, great reference.
And
here for it.
It's sort of like...
Are we... I was going to say, are we cultured now that this is a global thing? We're recording on multiple different time zones from around the world. Have we arrived? We're talking about film. Are we cultured now?
I don't understand what you're asking.
This is high society. This is what it's
That's
like.
That's what yes. I'm looking for. Are we highbrow high society now that we're a global show recording from yes. all corners of the universe
yes.
talking about film?
And
yeah, film, not movies, film.
I hope your notes have a bibliography at the end.
Is that going to be required? Yes. Am I going to have to email that into my prof at the end of the paper?
You have your Harbrace, what was it called? The Harbrace.
Wow.
Oh, fuck.
There are so many words I don't know on this podcast. This is not off to a great start for me.
Oh, my God. Max is referencing a college class we took together, which is the deepest of inside cuts.
Well, do you guys know what this podcast is?
Tell us about your show before we get rolling. How about that?
Okay. Well, this will serve as a dual informative little spiel to our guests and to our listeners. We're getting our scuba gear on and doing a deep dive into Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. On this podcast, we like to look back at a year in film and decide what has aged well, what hasn't, and try to figure out why. If that sounds interesting to you, jump back a few episodes in our feed and check out our recap of the year in film that was 2007. Then, after that, we'd like to jump into the depths and take a closer look at some of the films that piqued our interest from that given year. Ryan, does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. Can we say bad words on your show?
We can.
Yes. But Nick chooses not to.
Oh, seriously? Oh, frick you, dude. That's my shooting choice.
Shooting.
I like okay. Not only like doing like supplemental swear words, but using them in like just swearing wrong, like I don't know. Oh my shoot, or
oh my shoot.
Or
you can swear on this podcast, but we will bleep you out and ask you to leave.
Oh wow. That's going to be aggressive. You're going to have to work really hard to accomplish that. Our fans literally call us the Sweary Boys, so it's going to get real bad real quick.
I read
also,
that.
Also, you're definitely editing this if that's the case, Max.
Yeah. Good luck finding them all.
Okay, I'll also give our deep dive disclaimer that our deep dive episodes are no holds barred, so that means we get into spoiler territory. So if you've never seen Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, and you want to, maybe go back and watch the film and then rejoin us 2 hours and 18 minutes later after you've seen it. Disclaimer over. Cool.
That's our runtime, 220. All right.
I mean,
that's the film's runtime. Yeah.
No. That's what I meant. What I meant. I didn't.
But it felt actually so much faster. So let's.
I would love if we set the podcast runtime to the exact runtime of the film we're
discussing. The deep dive episode corresponds with the runtime of the movies we're talking
about. Wait for our Titanic episode.
Yeah. Oh, we naturally went 3.5.
You're going to release it on 4 cassette tapes?
Dude, imagine podcast. Yo, fucking
analog podcasting.
Dude, a sweet piece of swag would be a old cassette
an
tape
exclusive episode
with an episode on it. Yo,
okay. So who recommended that we watch this film? I lost track in the email thread.
Nick, I think you were the first one to actually say, "What about Harry Potter?"
Oh, I don't think I was.
Or was it Spencer?
I'm almost certain it was me.
Word.
So why?
For what it's worth, we talk about Harry Potter a lot on our show, so this is pretty on brand for us.
So what is why did this come to mind in 2007? What's your relationship with this movie, Spencer?
I figured if we were going to talk about a movie for an hour, might as well be one I had strong feelings about.
Okay, so you have strong feelings about it. Great.
I like this.
I was pretty sure there was a Harry Potter movie like most years throughout the 2000s, so I figured it was a pretty safe bet.
We do have one rule when we pick these, and that's that you have to like them or dislike them. We don't do like apathetic deep dives where you're like,
that sounds horrible. 2 hours and 18 minutes of being like, it was fine.
I'm not going to go here now, but I could make the argument that Order of the Phoenix is the best movie of the Harry Potter series.
Whoa,
I could
make that argument. Wow, man. Okay.
I mean, that's just objectively false. But
look,
I'd love to hear you try.
I thought we were still getting into the episode, and Ryan just fucking rips the Band-Aid off. Wow.
All right, well, let me intro the best with something right now, and that is that last night I watched my first Harry Potter film ever. And it was
Started with 5.
It was number 5.
Have you read any of the books, Max?
So I had read. Yeah, I'll briefly explain my relationship with Harry Potter. I read the first 4 books, I think, and I read the first one
that's perfect.
Like,
then
super, yeah, like before Harry Potter was even like a thing. Not like I'm trying to flex here, but I read it early. And I got into it, and I read the first 4 books, and then somehow when I saw the trailer of the first film, it was so, the world looked so different that it sort of like crumbled the entire thing for me. And I never read another book, and I'm not saying I hated the world, but it was so far from my mental connection with the story that the whole thing crumbled. And so I'd never watched the film.
So you got right up to where Voldemort comes back and then bailed? That's weird.
Yeah, I know.
Harry kills him at the end.
Dude.
Just in case. It is a weird place to stop, though, I gotta say. Although, I mean, I guess if you read 1 through 4 and then started watching number 5, you kind of picked up where the narrative left off. So you weren't, like, in terrible shape.
So that does strike a chord with me because, similarly, not for the same reasons, but I did almost, like, beat for beat have the same experience for you for 1 through 4. And then by the time the 5th one came out, it wasn't related to the movies for me. But by the time the 5th one came out, it was just, like, for whatever reason, I kind of felt, I don't know if it was fatigued by it or whatever, because, like, Order of the Phoenix as a book was, like, massive. And, like, it had been a little while since I'd read the 4th one, like, whatever. And then I didn't get back into it until, like right before the 7th book came out, and I technically read Order of the Phoenix, but I remember just being in and out of it, like, really apathetic. And then I just had this, like, sort of, like, renaissance, like, back into it, like, right before Deathly Hallows the book came out. And I hadn't seen the movies, like, 4 through Half Blood. I hadn't seen Goblet through Half Blood, and then saw Deathly Hallows 1 and 2, and then so I had kind of a fatigue in the middle, but I picked it back up and then kind of retroactively rewatched and read everything.
Got it.
So our two guests have read all books and seen all films.
Hell yeah.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Sorry.
No, you're good. You don't need to apologize. Recently, I'm, like, just affirming.
Not coming at
you. Like, within the last year, probably.
Okay.
Right, Ryan?
I had watched them, read them all and watched them all, and then within this year, reread and rewatched all of the books.
Fantastic.
Hell yeah.
And Spencer, so, and you've this is deep within your being, the books and the movies?
Yes, I've read all and seen all, probably within the last, I don't know, couple of years.
Cool. Word.
The world of Harry Potter is fresh in our frontal lobes.
Fantastic. That's an ideal place to be.
Just at all times.
At all times. At any given time.
I wish I could.
Harry Potter.
That is where I wanted to live. So wait, should we start with Spencer's Uncle Vernon hot takes?
Let's yeah, that'll be a nice appetizer. Hang on, let me just, like, think this through a second.
Hors d'oeuvres, I believe it's pronounced.
Hors d'oeuvres.
His summertime chilling at home fits are crazy. He's got the Tevas. He's got the, like, they're tube socks, but they're, like, dress sock texture. It's like a thick,
right?
Tube sock, dress sock, and they're always, like, they're not white, they're not dark, it's like a nice beige tube sock.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. He's got the leisure, like, floral, I'm on vacation, quadruple XL button-ups, but he's always mad, which is just such a cool dynamic of being like, I got the most relaxed-ass shirt on possible, but I fucking hate everybody.
I am constantly turning purple because of how angry I am at everything.
Also, Tevas, bro.
Word.
Fuck with your boy.
And the khaki shorts, it's a really nice pairing, especially with his skin tone. They're all, like, 5% off of his skin tone in one direction or the other. It's really good.
Somebody should create an Instagram account that's just, like, Uncle Vernon being, like, a hype beast style lord.
Just Photoshop Supreme logos onto all of his all of his sweaters.
Like,
all of
his, like, jumpers. Shoulder bags, like, strap bags.
Oh my god, that is fantastic.
Anyway, that was my only note.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us. Word, yeah. That's a wrap for Spencer. Again, What If Podcast, check it out. Yeah. On that note of the Dursleys, and I debated whether or not this was appropriate to bring up, but I think it is just because, like, Aunt Petunia was just for sure a little sexy in this one. Like, it was, like, sweltering, like, the skin was glistening.
Oh, wow, okay.
No, this. Wow. I just wanted to throw this out there. I'm not going to go into this, but had one of you been like, right, I would have been like, thank you. But none of you are doing that. And so I'm going
to. You got one wow with a head shake.
It's not too late to troll me. I am actively talking about
Speaking of the Dursleys, I was kind of like, I was kind of in this opening scene when the stepbrother is like burning Harry by being like, where's your mom? Oh, right. She's fucking dead. And I was like, wow, yeah. That dude's an asshole.
Big D.
It's not even good bullying, man. You're just like, you're just saying facts.
Well, this gets at something that I felt maybe is my biggest qualm with the movie is that Dudley's bullying in that scene is like super aggressive, and it's also just like notably just like this is kind of like hasty exposition, which felt like a quality that the whole movie sort of has. And it was sort of impossible to divorce in my head, like, okay, what is this like for someone who hasn't read the book? But like, to me, knowing that the book is like massive, I think it might be the biggest book, if not one of the biggest book in this series.
It is. It's over 800 pages.
Yeah. So it's just like, there's so much to cover. Just like, you can't do that in a feature film. The movie like played to me like in sort of a pacing level as just sort of a best of, like, hey, the majority of the audience that's going to be seeing this movie has read the book probably multiple times and are just sort of getting enjoyment out of seeing the events of the book reflected on the screen. And that's how it played to me. It was like hard to actually view it as like a feature film that like and I think it's compounded by the fact that it's like smack dab in the middle of this series. So it's just like it's like, just from like a structure standpoint, it's like, you know, so much as an audience and so much happens after this. Here's just sort of like a like highlight reel of the book. I mean, it's like highlight reels, it's too cheap of a word, but it felt like ultimately that's what this movie like played as to me. And like going back to Dursley's sort of bullying, it's just like reminder to the audience that your parents are dead. I'm mean and you're a wizard and weird. And then like, you know, it just felt like within, you know, the first 3 minutes of the movie we have that, and it's like, whoa, hang on. Okay. All right. Just being thrown into this a little too quickly.
And but. Cue the Dementors.
Exactly. Exactly.
Bring on the scary.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you. I have this in my notes too, that they tried to cram way too much into 2 minutes and 18 seconds. Thank you for the runtime earlier, Max. But
2 hours and 18 like minutes. Sorry to interrupt.
They really cut it down.
Oh, I said 218 minutes. I'm done.
No, 2 minutes.
Oh, it's just Dudley telling Harry that his parents are dead, and then roll credits. Yeah. That's the whole
dun, thing. Dun, 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 dun.
Voldemort killed your mom. And credits.
Bullying highlights. I totally agree with you. I also feel like for what they were given, they actually do a pretty good job of that highlight reel, like of hitting the high points and still making it a cohesive story.
Yeah.
That feels good. Like it works. It's not like I've seen some movies that jump so aggressively or that just are like, wait, this isn't even cohesive anymore. Like, I don't even understand the linear progression of this narrative because of that. And I don't feel like that happens with Order of the Phoenix.
They did cut out Winky the house elf, though, which really sucks.
Trash, bro. Trash. It's
supposed to be three house elves.
Wait, was this the one with Spew?
Winky's the drunk one.
Oh.
So there's the creature who's the evil one that sells him out. Who's Dobby, just like obviously.
Yeah.
And then there's Winky, who is only in the books for some reason.
Wait, but Winky's not from Order of the Phoenix, though. Winky's in
Teletubbies.
Goblet of
yeah, you're right. I was thinking of Teletubbies. Carry on.
Goblet of damn, bro. I got messed up.
Oh, good call, my bad. Teletubbies is what I was thinking of, yeah.
No, that is Teletubbies.
Anyway.
I don't know. I found myself having a hard time staying engaged with the movie. It like felt, I also couldn't shake, and this is like maybe a me thing, but I couldn't escape the feeling of like putting myself in a theater, like opening weekend of this movie, and just having Harry Potter like fans all around me just being like, oh, you know, just because it's just like, I don't know. Again, that's a me thing, but I just like was kind of like cringing at like, I just imagine like diehard fans like watching it and just being like, the thing I just read.
It's the Leonardo DiCaprio meme from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yes. Where he's like pointing at the screen, but just nonstop for the whole movie.
Except they're dressed in like sort of cosplay robes. Yeah.
This movie's showing at the Marcus Theater in Rosemont tonight. You can go check it out at 7:30. Get the full experience.
That's where I saw Max, the first two. Might as well.
There you go.
Max, how quick can you get back to the States?
Tonight.
We're going to Harry Potter tonight.
tonight.
Yeah. I'll be there.
I will see you at 8.
I'll be there.
Don't you worry about it.
Are any of the movies better than the books, or is it just like a greatest hits of each book? Because the books are like, they're all long. They're all like 400 or 500 pages, right?
No, I think all the movies sort of ruin the books. Like each movie has a small ruining of the book in it.
Ooh, hot take.
even though I like all the movies and I like all the books, I think it's inevitable that when you do a movie on a book, you sort of ruin the book. And it kind of goes back to what you're saying, Max, about the whole, like, if you have a vision of this, particularly as a child, when your imagination is wild and you can get into a book and create all these, like, worlds and faces and outfits and shit in your brain, the books or the movies will just inherently ruin that each time because you have a new world for each movie, right? Like, everyone has a different vision of what Grimmauld Place looked like in Order of the Phoenix right. when they read it before they saw Grimmauld Place in the movie. It can never knock it out the way that you think it should. So there's a small ruining that happens every time.
I like that take. And this is a good opportunity to just briefly, it made me remember how I envisioned Grimmauld Place specifically. And it was literally this, Ryan, you may all know what I'm talking about. I had just, without thinking about it, while reading it, I had imagined Grimmauld Place taking place in the cul-de-sac that was like on the street that I grew up. Like that's just how in my brain I had envisioned it. And it just like, it's like, that's something that like I didn't consider like, oh yeah, this is just the cul-de-sac that like in my neighborhood. But it's like when you're reading something location wise, it's fascinating. Like, at least for me, it's like no matter the layout of a room, whatever it is, I'm usually like inevitably drawing from like a layout that I know, whether it be like my grandparents' house or my old house or like my college place, like it just inevitably that's where my brain goes. And so seeing this, like specifically Grimmauld Place in this movie, it was sort of like, oh no, not at all, not even close.
They didn't shoot this in my cul-de-sac,
right?
You got it way wrong.
Well, that's like the impossibility of like movie adaptations, where it's just like,
yeah,
listen, kid, like this is what the author, we can, you better believe we consulted it, with the author about this,
especially
this what she said,
especially in like a world building situation,
right? Totally.
And again, every one of these movies builds a world. Go ahead, Spencer.
I do think the books that had like 300 pages of just describing a Quidditch match were pretty well served by being cut down for movies.
Oh, no Quidditch in this movie. What a, I had not noticed that.
There's zero Quidditch in
right.
this movie.
I'm hoping that's the thesis behind Ryan's "this is the best movie" statement. That's the only way I would listen to that argument.
Spencer has hated on Quidditch every time we've talked about Harry Potter in every capacity.
Wow.
It's such a waste of time. It has nothing to do with the overall story. It doesn't even fucking make sense. She designed a game that would not ever work in practice.
So you've never gone to play Quidditch at like Bryn Mawr?
Yeah, what the fuck, dude?
I've not played.
Have you seen people playing Quidditch
no.
before?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Wait, this is a real thing that people do in the real world?
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
They run around with like,
oh wow,
broomsticks, and it's kind of like a dodgeball. They like recreate Quidditch, except on the ground.
Yeah, it's essentially just it's like nerdy ultimate frisbee, essentially.
Okay, wait, time out. The core principle of the game of Quidditch is that there is a magic ball that flies of its own accord wherever it feels, and one person has to catch that ball.
Squirrel. If I play
squirrel?
In the park, it's a squirrel. You gotta catch him.
Yeah.
You drug a squirrel and spray paint it gold and then yeah. set it free in the park.
It's nice because the gold spray paint drugs the squirrel naturally. So it's just like a one step process.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah.
That honestly perfect. Sounds like a better game than real Quidditch.
It also sounds super illegal.
Yeah, there's a group of kids in this park terrorizing wild animals. They appear to be spray painting squirrels.
They appear to be wizards. There's just no point to the game other than catching the snitch. If you catch the snitch, you win. So all the other parts of the game are completely inconsequential.
I mean,
and yet she spends like 200 pages on one fucking match.
It's never 200 pages. And
you're right. A bunch of pages.
Just let him. He's always got to wear himself out on Quidditch before we can move to the next. Just let him wear himself out on Quidditch.
Can I ask a question about Harry Potter world to you experts?
Yes.
Are there other wizard schools?
Yes,
there are. So there's like competing. There's like the public ones and the private ones. And
that's how are the wizard schools funded? You can't be diverting public funds to wizard schools, right? That blows the whole thing wide open. They got
like
black budget
funds.
Wizard schools.
Accio funding.
It's public funding, but it's wizard fund.
Public. Okay, so wizards pay wizard taxes in addition to their regular. Do they pay muggle taxes?
That's a good question.
Yes.
Probably. Yes. I don't think so. But given the amount of curiosity that Mr. Weasley has for the novelty of Muggle world, I don't think That's a man who is not familiar with how muggle taxes work.
Here's one of my biggest qualms with this movie, actually, is that they have Mr. Weasley getting on the subway and not knowing how the subway works, which just seems impossible. He's like blown away by the fact that there is a subway. Like, he somehow didn't even know it existed.
Yeah.
Yeah, wait, because are the wizards in the book in society and you just don't know who they are?
Okay. Yes.
Yes.
Correct. Yeah.
Yes.
That's they why live there are all those society. Rules about like not using magic in the presence of muggles.
Okay, mm-hmm. Got it. Yeah, so how would you not know about the subway or the oyster?
It doesn't work if you think about it for very long.
Yeah. There's a lot of, well, this is another thing that I talk about that I had written down in my notes, but like, one of the things that is difficult about both the books and the movies of these is exactly what Spencer said, is like, if you think about it too long, things kind of do start to fall apart. Mm-hmm. It's also, there is like a laziness to magic, because magic cures all kinds of plot holes, mm-hmm. and like all kinds of things. It's just like, well, how would that happen? Well, we've got magic. So the magic, like, a perfect example in this film specifically is the Room of Requirement, right? Like, we've got to fight back and we need a place to practice. Where will we ever do it? Why don't we use the room that just appears when you need a room? Magic, you know, like it's done well in a lot of situations, but magic is just a cure-all for a lot of the shit that like you wouldn't have access to otherwise, or you'd have to think of something a lot more creative to make that work in the narrative. Just go like, we'll just throw a healthy dose of magic on it, and now we've got the plot, like, that's the type point of that we need.
That type of stuff comes across more clumsily in the movies too.
100%.
Yeah.
Even with the room requirement, like, they do some setup earlier in the books of like, there's some, I don't know if it's in this book or an earlier book, where like Dumbledore is walking around at night because he like knows if he walks over there will be a bathroom when he has to pee in the middle of the night. And like, they fleshed those types of, like, it's still silly, but at least they like do a little bit of the groundwork for it. Whereas in the movies, it's just like, bam, magic room.
Yes.
Totally. It fits everybody and has everything you need, and the adults can't see it. Boom. Here we go.
Here you go. Perfect. Totally. Just what you need.
Yeah. No, it's like, it's definitely like a big, it just reveals, or it just like heightens my appreciation for like the believability of the world, specifically in the books, where it's just like,
I agree.
It's just not, obviously it's not realistic because it's magic, but it's just like, what does magic do and what are the constraints and struggles like within a magic world is like never really questioned in the book. It's just presented in a way that's like very believable. Whereas like the movies, that is one of the things, and I think it ties back to sort of the sort of like highlight reel quality of this movie in particular, where it's just like, no, like you haven't earned that. Like, this feels cheap. Like, this feels like it looks pretty good and all this, but like it just feels cheap and unearned in the movie.
Hey, you know what doesn't look pretty good in this movie? Grop.
Oh, yeah.
Bro, the effects in this movie are actually really good. Like, even the when they go rescue Harry and they're like flying through London or whatever, like that stuff actually looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Particularly when you think about it being like, you know, they were probably doing that in 2005, 2006. Like, I think in general a lot of that stuff looks pretty good. And then they introduce you to this giant that for sure looks like it needed about 4 to 5 more hours of rendering before they put it in the movie. Yeah. It's just like not fully, like the fidelity of Grop is so bad. It always, every time it arrives at that scene, all I can think is like, y'all worked so hard on the other 95% of the special effects for this movie, and this CGI fucking giant looks like a high schooler did it in their class.
It seems like, I don't know anything about filmmaking, but it seems like one of the easier things to achieve without CGI, right? Just like a tall person, that can't be that hard to do practically, right?
That's how they do Hagrid. Hagrid is tall, and then they shoot him up for the whole movie series and just make him look like a giant.
I just watched Honey, I Blew Up the Kid this week, and it looked better.
That's all
than
just low angles.
Giant.
Yeah, it's Godzilla style special effects.
I mean, you're touching, this is a main component of our podcast, is looking back at films and seeing why they aged well or why they didn't age well. And this is, you know, when you're incorporating this much CGI into a movie, you're starting to play with fire a little bit, because you can like really date yourself. And this was a compliment I had of the movie, is that it looked, all in all, looked pretty good. Given it was shot 13 years ago. But I agree with you that a couple scenes could use a little bit more render time.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, and thinking of it in that context of like someone in 20 years viewing this movie, I feel like inevitably it warrants the explanation that like, hey, you have to understand like Harry Potter was a huge series at the time. And like, I mean, here's the end of this thought. How many years do you think it's going to be before we get remakes of these movies?
Ooh.
Whoa. That had not crossed my mind.
Because the last one was what, like 2012? 11? 12?
11, you're right. 11, yeah. Deathly Hallows Part 2 was 11.
I think the thing that's hard about it is, like, you know, how do you keep the series alive with, like the Grindelwald or, like, Magic Beasts or Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find
Them
stuff?
Right, right.
That stuff is so world adjacent and doesn't even involve any of like the characters from the originals.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, do you end up losing the interest of your audience in hearing that story retold again?
Also, does anyone want to work with J.K. Rowling in 2020?
It factors in, but also, does J.K. Rowling even get like a say on if the Harry Potter movies are remade in 10 years or 15 years?
I mean,
does somebody else own those rights?
I mean, yeah, the legality of it, I don't know. I'm just saying from the perspective of like, if you equate this to like Lord of the Rings, where it's just like a generation's like story, you know, like that, like this will be read to kids. The illustrated versions are still coming out. Like, I think the timelessness of this story goes really far into the future potentially.
Yeah.
So, I mean, thinking about the cultural impact of this movie series, I think it'll be at least 20 years before this is like even like really entertained, I think.
I have two quick thoughts about that. One, I hear you, and at the same time, I feel like it's sort of the equivalent of someone being like, we should make 4, 5, 6 of Star Wars again.
Fair.
And the fans would be like, no, the fuck you won't.
Yeah, but
like,
are these
that exists?
Are these as revered as the first Star Wars are, or is it more like Dune, where it's like, wouldn't it be cool if we redid these movies with today's technology and what all the shit we could do? Nick,
I mean, I guess I just used Lord of the Rings just because. I mean, it's not like a beat for beat example, but they had like the kind of like charming animated series of the Lord of the Rings in like the late 70s, early 80s, that the whole bit of it, yeah, was like no one really liked it. So that's not really the same.
It's like a very different format.
Yeah.
With a different audience.
But I think of like, maybe this is different, but like I think of something like The Christmas Carol, where it's just like endlessly iterative. And this is different.
So you're saying like way down the road.
Way down the road. I also think like, I don't know, there's an angle of it that's like it feels like the film industry has like accelerated so quickly with how the time frame in which they're willing to just reboot something. Like that feels that like it's only gotten shorter and shorter. I do think the Harry Potter series is a holy grail in that respect and can't be like handled like a, you know, like a Freddy Krueger or Michael Myers or like reboot or like, but like Spider-Man is like kind of comical, but that's different because that's like, you know, many different stories. What I think is that, going back to Ryan's point about these are different than the Star Wars movies, because Star Wars is originally like it's cinema. Like it's not based on, you know, it's an original story meant to be seen on the screen. I think Harry Potter, because of like the difference that it's books, I think is a significant difference in regards to, I could never see the original Star Wars being remade, but I could see Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone be remade. Like,
and then you got to recast a kid who's like going to be the kid for the next 18
this is
years
something,
as you like put the movies out.
This is something I wanted to touch on because I found myself thinking about this a lot, that these are money-making machines. All these movies cost like $100 to $200 million to make, and they all made like $1 billion. But they were must have been so much work, like especially these kids being cast at I don't know what age, probably like 18 months before the filming even like started.
It was 10, I think. 10 or 11.
And then committing to it for so long. Like Emma Watson must have done a similar type of scene so many times for her entire adolescence. Like, you got to run up the stairs and you tell Harry, blah, 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 blah. You know, and it's just like, would be fucking bizarre to have that be your childhood.
Look at Ron like he's a dumbass for the 3 millionth time. I was just going to say, none of those kids really went on to have, like, great careers either.
I mean, I think jury's still out. I think, like, Emma Watson certainly, you know, she's been distancing herself, I think, fairly successfully. I mean, there hasn't been. And Daniel Radcliffe, too, is, like, he's been doing stuff. I think, like, the shadow of Harry Potter is so huge that they haven't gotten out of it yet. But I think they've been doing relatively good stuff nonetheless.
I mean, if you are a character for a decade, like, I mean, you're going to have to not be that character for at least a decade, I think, for people to stop thinking of you as exclusively that character.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to say, Nick, about your point about remaking these movies really quick is I could see there being a world. I actually think this is probably the most likely thing they would do is go somewhere in the middle and do sort of a Star Wars-esque thing where they go redo some of the special effects. They go redo some of, like, the audio or, like, you know, recoloring or some of that stuff. And do extended versions.
Yeah.
They must have shot so much more of these movies than we actually saw. If you think about how they got these movies down to 218 or whatever. I mean, I know there's deleted scenes on a lot of the DVDs. I haven't watched most of them. But, like, I bet there's not only deleted scenes. I bet there's additional scenes that they just never cut into a deleted scene that they could probably go back to and go, like, all right, we're going to redo the CGI on like stuff that needs redoing or just polishing or whatever. And then we're going to add another 30, 45 minutes for the super fans who are like, I don't give a fuck if it's 3 hours and 15 minutes. I'll watch 3 hours and 15 minutes instead of 2 hours and 18 minutes. I'm a fan. I don't care. I could see that happening in the next 5 to 10 years. And that would be a huge money machine and be a thing I would 100% fucking watch if they were done well. And like, money.
I'm totally behind that. You're totally right. Where it's just like they're like there's enough nostalgia for this series that like they make the smallest. I mean, just like think of them just making a big deal about like, hey, we're re-releasing all the Potter movies. Like it's gonna be one a month this entire like you know for the rest of the year, and they all have like little new bits. You know that totally makes sense.
Can we get a Harry Potter open world video game somewhere in there?
It exists. It just came out.
What? All right. Well,
like literally. Great.
Next topic.
There's a hang on
for one of the
systems. It just came out like
dude, what system do you have? Do you remember this question when you were in third grade?
Oh no,
grade?
It's
first time you said anything in 15 minutes and dude, what system do you have?
2021, it's called Hogwarts Legacy and it will be available on PC, PS4, PS5, Xbox One, Xbox X and Xbox S.
Well, wow. I guess I'm getting a PlayStation 5.
Damn.
Yeah, buddy, I will
play. All right, this does sound awesome.
Absolutely a big enough nerd to make this happen.
Oh my god. And you can just run the fuck around Hogwarts and the campus, dude.
Dude, can you play Quidditch though?
So tight. For sure.
Oh, I 100% bet there's Quidditch in there. Does a Quidditch capacity? There's got to be.
Oh no, wait, hang on. I'm seeing it's called Hogwarts Legacy, but the subtitle is No Quidditch. Shoot,
Spencer's like, I'm in.
What do you think that means?
I'm gonna mod mine just to remove all mentions of Quidditch.
Mod mine.
The goal of the game is to catch the snitch. I wonder what that means.
Spencer becomes a computer hacker just to play this game, but without Quidditch.
Can you guys fill me in on the creepy janitor? Who the fuck is this guy?
Filch.
Filch? Yeah, he's a real dick.
Yeah, he seems like.
So here's his backstory. He should be magical. He comes from a magical family, but he's sterile. He can't do any magic.
Oh, shit.
So he's real he's pissed all the time, and he takes it out on the magic kids.
He's the incel of
Hogwarts.
He's what's
known.
I mean, yeah, basically.
Can't get any.
Can't get he's any got, magic. He's can't got get a weird, his sparks off.
He's got a cat that he really cares a little bit too much about. He doesn't bathe.
Ooh. Okay. Well, I was going to for Filch, I did feel like the most like he really revealed like his character. Like if he's like willing to just like fucking relish turning on the entire school and shit, like he has absolutely no moral compass. I was like, this is more than like a cheeky sort of like, oh, this is Filch's storyline for this story. It was just like, oh, he should be put in Azkaban and rot. Like he's like fucking like complacent, like and like relishing it. I like
Yeah, he was getting off on hanging those little black dudes up.
Dude,
wild that like they run Umbridge out of town, and then at the beginning of book six, Filch is just right back.
Yeah, that's not okay. It's
chilling in the school.
No, yeah.
Hogwarts this isn't has the like Simpsons. a very high threshold for how much evil they will accept in their midst. It's like you've got one quarter of the school that's just like you all accept are a bunch of evil little bastards, and they're like, this Slytherin, whatever. They're probably gonna try and kill students. Us at some point.
That's a good call.
They're students. They're still students.
Yeah.
We gotta love them anyway. I was gonna say, speaking of Filch, I totally agree with that take, but also, is Dolores Umbridge not the most like hateable villain of any? Like, I feel like with most movies, the villain is just like, oh, I get it. That's the bad guy. I'm going to watch this movie now. But with Dolores Umbridge, just the way she's written and the way, I don't know the actress's name, but the way that she plays that role, it's so good because it makes you like viscerally hate her for that entire film.
Yeah.
It really does affect how much I can enjoy that movie, though.
I totally agree.
Because it's so irritating? Yeah.
Like, I know she needs to be unlikable, but, like, I'm starting to not like the entire film because of that character.
Because so she exists. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and who's running the show here? I thought Dumbledore could like stop some of this nonsense. Is this explained in the book that she has like some unilateral powers over Dumbledore?
Yeah, so this the crux of this book slash movie is there's the like the Ministry of Magic, which is like the governing body of all wizards, and they are like opposed to Dumbledore during this book because Dumbledore and Harry are saying that Voldemort is back, and the Ministry of Magic doesn't want to admit it because then they got to do something about it. So instead they've pitted themselves against Dumbledore, and they install Umbridge at Hogwarts to try and like take power away from Dumbledore.
Okay. And the Ministry of Magic is generally a bit stuffy, it seems like.
Yeah, they're prats, if you will, in the British parlance.
Yeah, they've got some specific issues at this point in the story too, of like kind of siding with the evil uprising.
Ooh, okay.
That was kind of hard to take too. Like, just the note that this movie starts off on, and I remember this from the books, where it's like Harry's sort of one of the things like Harry's going through is like kind of just being left in the dark, despite being the most important person, and him being like really immensely frustrated with that.
The whole movie, I was like, why will no one give Harry any information? He's like always asking questions, and they're like walking away from ignoring him, like,
fuck off, Harry.
Dude, and it's like, and the movie starts off like that's like the first thing that's established, and then we get Umbridge right away. And like, so it's like that combo of things where it just like, it feels like it's just manipulating you to just be like frustrated and angry. It's just like, what the fuck? Like, tell him something, do something. Why is she doing this?
Okay, so my hot take to counter yours, Ryan, real quick, 55 minutes in, is that this is actually the least enjoyable movie for that reason.
Mm.
Nick's giving a thumbs up, which is a strong podcast move.
Spencer is lying. I disagree heartily. No, I'm 100% just gaslighting Spencer. No, I completely agree with you, Spencer. I think, because I've seen all of the Harry Potter movies, and I think this might be my least favorite.
Sick
although
brain,
Goblet and this are very like in the same sort of murky middle for me.
It's the turning point where like it's not the fun little kid movies anymore, where they're all just like friends and learning how to be wizards, and they're not rallying against something yet either. It's like this in between of like, we're developing this evil thing that you're all gonna have to
tension.
Work together against,
yeah,
but you're like not all on the same page yet, so you don't have the fun of like Harry and Hermione and Ron are friends and like goofing around. And you, by the end, you get to the like, okay, all the Dumbledore army kids are like united and friends and going to destroy Voldemort. But like the middle hour and a half of this movie is just sort of irritating.
And I would say on a macro level, the middle like three or four movies of the series is also that. And like in the books, that again, the books like operate, you don't feel, you kind of, maybe it's arguable that I felt that a little bit, but like, just talking about the movie specifically, I bet there is a trilogy that works really well just of this entire series. You can make three movies of it and it works really well, where you start with them as like the kids, middle is sort of like, I don't know, dawning on them, because it's like that. I think that's exactly what I was feeling. That's why I saw the movies and the series, like read the books the way I did, where it was like the beginning is very like stark and fun, and then like then it gets murky, but then like by the end of it, it's so like, it's great again.
I think that's probably more apparent on a rewatch too, where you know where it's going to eventually.
Totally.
And like, it's frustrating that it takes so long to get there.
Totally.
I think if you're watching it for the first time, you'd feel differently about it. But like, knowing that like they just need to get through this to get to the like good stuff makes it even more frustrating.
Dude, that is exactly what it is. It's like rewatching it. It's like, you know, if it's a great movie, like on the second watch, because it's like watching this a second time, I felt like above its mechanics. Like it's like, oh, this is just like kind of pandering to like the, you know, the fans of the book, which was kind of everyone. And it's just like that serves like that's like a one and done way of doing it, where it's just like
maybe my take then is influenced by the fact that I do really like this book a lot, and I think this book is one of the better books, and so maybe I'm just like projecting that onto the movie itself, because I actually think Goblet of Fire and Order of the Phoenix are my favorite of the two books, so maybe that's like what's swaying me into being like, no, it's great because the story, and I like the story and I like what happens. But I do agree that like the assembling of that tension with Umbridge and with the Ministry and with Harry is a lot to stomach. I think another piece that I wrote down, and again, I don't want this to be like a compare the book to the movie thing all the time, but to the point of like going through that tension for a payoff, there is an entire chapter at the end of Order of the Phoenix that is a conversation between Dumbledore and Harry that explains everything from the book. All of the why I ignored you, all of the prophecy, all of the what happened with your parents. And it's literally like 50 pages of the book, and they distilled that scene in the movie down to like 25 or 45 seconds of them like, I'm sorry, Harry, I couldn't tell you because Dumbledore would see, or because Voldemort would see inside your mind, and then he would know what I was doing, and then we'd all be fucked. I'm sorry. And then they carry on. So it's like, whoa. The reader got a fucking massive payoff in this chapter. And all this tension you went through was a big part of it, was to get that chapter. But then they kill that scene from the movie, and then you don't get the same payoff from the tension to that scene.
I actually saw the movie before I read the book and never understood that dynamic, because it's like just glossed over. And I remember reading the book for the first time and being like, oh, I finally know what the fuck's happening here.
Yeah.
And then I felt the same way later on with the Snape reveal.
Yeah.
I'm like, that stuff never really clicked for me just watching the movies. And I think that's the nuance that makes that shift from like lighthearted, silly wizarding stuff to like, oh shit, fascism and we're all going to die, much more engaging in the books, because there's that nuance and the multiple layers, and you learn more about the relationships and what's happening behind the scenes instead of just like kind of hand waving it for 30 seconds in the movies.
Books. Yeah. 2.5 hours.
Yeah. I mean, it seems clear, like if you're trying to adapt this much source material and this big of a series, that like your only bet is to, and this is coming from me never having read this book, but your only bet is to try to like get the spirit of it somehow, and like the best of moments crammed into a 2-hour block, and it's going to be impossible to, you know, capture the details like
right. And right. That's exactly what I mean by every one of the movies ruining the book somehow, is because that's all it can do, which means it can't do the thing that you want it to do, which is be the book.
Okay, so this feels like a good time to bring this up. So I think like very generally speaking, from just like a film fandom standpoint, Prisoner of Azkaban is regarded as the best Harry Potter film. That's my personal favorite. And like, generally speaking, I think Spencer, how do you feel on this?
Just if that's the best one or not?
That's the best movie. Not really.
It's first or second for me. I really enjoy Goblet of Fire, but it's more of like a, I wouldn't necessarily say it's the best one.
Word. Okay. Was really hoping you were going to back me up there. So, long and short, I don't think I'm alone in thinking that Prisoner of Azkaban is the best. And it's kind of, I feel somewhat obnoxious saying that because Cuarón directed it. And so it's like, oh yeah, he's like the most prestigious kind of auteur filmmaker to like handle the series. But I think the reason Prisoner of Azkaban works as a movie is that it, to Ryan's point, it's still like ruined shit. Like it's like, it's still not like, I love Prisoner of Azkaban, the book, the movie's different, but the movie like feels like it's one of the only ones, if not the only one in the series that really relishes like, hey, this is one movie. So like, it feels like it's really deeply felt. Like you feel the seasons in it, you feel the textures. There's a presentness at Hogwarts. Like there's a veneer of Hogwarts that's taken away in that movie, the way it's shot, the way it feels, that these other movies, it gets further and further away from that. I feel like, especially like in Goblet of Fire and Order of the Phoenix, the films where it just gets like, has this gloss over it that's like, okay, we're just seeing a highlight reel. Whereas Prisoner of Azkaban, it's like, listen, this isn't the book. Like the book is its own thing. This is like, there's like a, it's relishing being a movie. It feels like Prisoner of Azkaban does. Okay.
I think one of the things to back up your take, Nick, that I think is instrumental to it is that it is sort of put into a more specific box.
Mm-hmm.
To tell that story properly than I think some of the other movies are. Some of the other movies are like, we've got 800 pages and we go here and we talk about this and we do that and we go over here. Mm-hmm. We're going to only be able to hit the highlights. But with Prisoner of Azkaban, you can't really hit the highlights of that without being like, no, we have to do this time loop in exactness twice and be in these places at these times to make the final narrative payoff work for that book and that movie.
Right. It like narrows your choices as in like adapting it than it does the others. I would agree. And I think like also the factor of it being a significantly shorter book as compared to like this middle chunk is like a serious factor too.
And the only thing I can contribute to this part of the conversation is that one was directed by Cuarón, and this whole series is like largely missing a great director when you look at when you look back at it.
I get very nervous when we start shit talking as like someone who wants to work in the film industry.
You do get kind of nervous when I start talking shit. I'm not saying these are shitty directors. I'm saying that this is such a massive franchise, seemingly with an unlimited budget for director.
I totally agree.
It seems like they had a hard time attracting, you know, top billed directors.
Spielberg was like, got very close to doing the first two, and then Chris Columbus.
Well, I read about this film that there was like six people turned it down before David Yates took it.
I'm just saying it's like become like a classic thing where it's like someone gets some success and then they discover a podcast where they shit talk something and then they're just done before it even began.
Nick, just throw all your hot takes in the chat and I'll say them.
Yeah.
This makes so much sense, Nick, now looking back at all these, because you're always a bit skittish when I try to get in this territory. Like,
yeah. Dude, it's crystallizing the more I like, the longer we go where I'm like, but anyway, so yes, Cuarón did the third one, and I don't want to be like the dude that's like, I like him as a filmmaker, so therefore that's the best movie. But I do think it is the best movie for multiple reasons. It's just like, there's the way it's shot is like, it's just, it feels different from all the other movies in a pretty big way.
Can I make a transition to one final point that I wanted to talk about, which is a very specific scene in Order of the Phoenix?
Yes, please.
Okay. So, high level, I feel like this is true across all the movies. I feel like the acting in these movies is super hit or miss, which I think is part of what makes them like
beloved.
Like good and bad, you know? Mm-hmm. Like you have like masterful performances from fucking Alan Rickman and Gary Oldman and Ralph Fiennes, and like those are awesome. And then you have these kids who are like kind of learning how to act as they're growing up because this is the only shit they've ever done. There's this one scene. Okay, generally speaking, I think the love story between Harry and Cho is pretty clumsy and clunky in this. It's clumsy in the book too. Dude. It's one of the
It's hilariously bad in the movie. Yeah.
Okay. It's hilariously bad in the movie as they do the love scene. But there is a scene at the end of a room of requirement section before they go on holiday break where Harry and Cho kiss for the first time.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Okay. But it's this one shot in this scene that just I can't get my head around. On the kiss, they're talking and he says something about like it's probably got nargles in him. And she goes, what's that? And he goes, I don't know. And then they just start kissing, which is just weird in its own right and not how the kiss happens in the book. And there is nothing touching on their entire bodies except for their lips. Now tell me when in your life have you made out with anyone and the only part of your bodies that was touching for like, I counted, I actually looked at the seconds. It's like a 17 second long kiss and their arms are at their sides and there is, you can see light between them and they're just standing there going like this.
But that actually seems pretty believable for a middle school kiss, honestly.
That yeah. was going to be my.
Probably when I was under mistletoe, I pulled that off.
But it's first kiss. It is first kiss, yes.
I don't know, bro. It just I have rewound it a couple times because I was just like,
yeah, that shot did stand out to me as memorable. Yeah, where it just felt like a little too like it's like it was just like the veneer of filmmaking was like kind of taken away there.
I don't know. I couldn't get over that. It just struck me so strange, and it was like
luckily Cho's accent totally redeems that scene.
Luckily,
got her.
Luckily,
got her.
God, I need
amazing.
No. I love your drop-ins. This is fucking killing me.
Yeah, it reminds me of Harry Potter chat rooms in like 1997.
No, they do not, Max. Harry marries Ron's sister, and Ron and Hermione
Ginny.
Get together.
Oh damn, Ron! Kicked his coverage for sure. Jesus,
yeah. Big time. Like,
yeah, Hermione settled in like sixth grade and just never looked back. Can I hit you guys with some like rapid fire meaningless hot takes to round out?
Please.
This Luna Lovegood in this film. It's her first appearance, right? I don't get why she's supposed, like, she seems pretty chill and all the kids are like not cool with Luna and she gets bullied and shit. She's one of the most like well-adjusted characters in this entire story. Aside from the fact that she carries around loose raw meat in her bag to feed the ghost horses that no one else can see.
Yeah.
I see them too. The Thestrals.
Yeah. So anyway, hot take number one. Luna seems pretty chill. All the other kids are dicks.
My favorite part of that scene with the Thestrals is he asks her if her feet are cold because she's not wearing shoes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Does Harry think the point of shoes are just to keep your feet warm?
Yeah, what are you saying?
Well, no, I think they're like outside and he's like, aren't your feet cold? And she's like, a bit. And he's like, why don't you have shoes? And she says, I think the Nargles took them. But I think it's implied that like the kids are fucking with her and stealing her shoes.
Oh, I mean, that's said directly later that like...
Later it is, for sure.
Maybe the end of the next book or something. Yeah, she gets bullied like crazy.
She's pretty chill and they're just stealing her shoes. Like that's pretty fucked up.
Yeah. Yep. That adds to sort of the insanity of at least the beginning of the movie where it's just like, what is the fuck wrong with everybody? Where it's just like, I don't believe you, Harry. My aunt says that you're lying. And it's like, fuck off. We just got back to school, dog. How are you? Like, Christ.
It speaks to that. It speaks to how badly Hogwarts needs a fucking therapist on staff.
They could just have that janitor do it then.
Yes.
If you want a muggle.
Jesus Christ.
He's not a muggle. He's a...
What the sterile fuck, janitor.
Squib.
He's a squib.
Sterile janitor.
incel janitor.
Also, it speaks to how fucking bad J.K. Rowling is at writing, like, girls and women characters. They're just always so fucking one-dimensional, and it's amplified in the movies because they skip so much shit. Like, Ginny is totally inconsequential in the movies. until the very last scene when she ends up married to Harry. And in the book, she's doing a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
But still is always just this like background, whatever. If we need somebody to save our ass because I've written myself into a corner, Ginny will do it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good call.
All the girls are super one-dimensional. Last hot take, Snape is by far the worst teacher at Hogwarts. When he's doing the Occlumency shit, his entire lesson is scream at Harry to just do it. That's only instruction.
Do it better.
Point his wand at his face and tell him to concentrate.
Close your mind.
I also feel like Snape's kind of role and the ratio that the amount that he's in this movie reminds me of just like how in like a TV series, like a main character, it's like, oh, this is just doesn't have a storyline for them, where it's like, man, like two movies ago, this dude was everything. And now he's like reduced to being like a grumpy dude in a montage. Like it was like this lack of Snape was tough. And again, maybe it's just like necessary evil for the structure of it, but it just felt like they did him a little too dirty. Like he could have had like a scene or two more, just to incorporate him.
And also, if you can acknowledge that the acting in your movies is a little hit or miss here and there, and you've got Alan Rickman around, you might want to, you know, trot him out there a little harder to kind of boost things up.
Yeah, up the Rickman.
You know,
down, on the Rickman scale, this was like a 1.2.
A 1.2 Rickmans?
Yeah. I made myself giggle on that one. All right, closing thoughts.
Is Sirius based on Julian Assange? Is anyone else getting this vibe?
Oh my god!
Oh, well,
I don't think that timeline works, but we'll say yes.
Akio WikiLeaks.
Jesus Christ!
Also, did you know, as someone that is less familiar with the books and the series. There's a lot, and this might not be a hot take at all, but there's a lot of Lord of the Rings, like, tropes and themes and similarities going on. Does anyone else feel this way?
Only in, like, just because it's, like, fantasy world. Like, I felt like it's kind of, like, public, like, trolls are public domain, elves are public domain in, like, the genre of fantasy. But, but it's not, like, anything.
Dumbledore, like, what about, like, Harry being... Yeah. It seems like the burden that Harry carries as being the one.
Harry Carey.
I tried to kill Voldemort.
Yeah, no, I mean, I lost it
when you said Harry Carey. Now I'm
neither can live
while the
or neither can whatever. Neither can live until the other dies.
Neither really can live while the other dies. If one of you is dying, the other one's also dying.
Fuck.
I think like what you're referring to, Max, is just like the whole like sacrificial protagonist.
Yeah, it's a
like trope. Like that in its own right is a trope as well, right? Like the Jesus character. Sure, like
yeah. It's a little more specific than that, though. It's like a direct mental link to the evil.
Yeah, thing, like he's being infected by the evil, and he's like. Looking more sickly as time goes on.
That's more like myth. Cause I mean like that's Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader, you know, it's like Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, Harry Potter all fall into that. Like they're massively popular. And one of the main reasons for that is that they're all kind of like pretty objectively drawing from like the, like, you know, myth of the hero. Like they're like classic, like hero journeys.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. It's very hero journey specific. I think
Daniel Radcliffe is normally that pale. I don't think they've tried to make him look worse throughout the movies. This is actually one of his better haircuts, unfortunately.
I want to know any like final like, yeah, this is a good movie. This is a bad movie. I don't care. Particularly from you, Max, because like you've never seen any of these movies. I'm like, did you even enjoy it, or were you just like, this was pretty garbo, or like, what was?
I was hoping that it would be set up a little bit more for someone like me who was completely unfamiliar with what the hell was going on, and like, you know, be a standalone film, and it wasn't really. But I mean, I have to be in like the big minority seeing this without seeing it. Any of the other films and reading the books previous to this one. 20 years ago. Yes.
In 2020.
So I'm not mad.
Yeah, for the first time in 2020.
It was a little bit, like I felt left out, let's say.
Did you enjoy it at all? Or were you just like, yeah, all right, I get that. I get what this is.
Like I said before, it looked better than I expected it to. And the kids are kind of adorable, honestly. Like, I know they're kind of going through this like adolescence, puberty thing, but like there's something very cute about their like camaraderie and like, yeah, they pull it off somehow. So it wasn't a total waste of time, but around the like hour 50 mark, I was sort of like, okay, I feel like there's still a lot of stuff that has to happen before this movie's over. So my butt was a little sore, but
sure,
I appreciate the exercise.
Spencer, how do you feel?
It's maybe my least favorite Potter movie, but it's still a Potter movie. It's like a solid, solid B-.
I guess the question we usually ask is, how do you think the 13 years this film has had to air out, is it better or worse for it? Do you enjoy it more than you did the first time you saw it, or does it age a bit poorly?
I think the series as a whole has held up pretty well. I think for being one of the later films, this one did not age particularly well. Like, I'm willing to give the first two more of a pass because it's like it was 2002 or whatever, and like all of your main actors are under the age of 13. This one doesn't hold up as well as some of the other Potter.
All right, if I were to watch one more Potter movie, just like, what one would you recommend? Only one, though.
For you specifically, I think I gotta go with Nick here and recommend Azkaban, just because it holds up, or like it's more self-contained than the later ones, and will give you like a pretty good. There's not a whole lot of like setup like in the earlier movies. There's just like world building and shit, and this one it's like you're in the story, but also you could consume it on its own, and it would mostly make sense.
Ryan, what's your feeling 13 years later on this film? I guess you led by saying it was the best one. I mean, have you come off that a bit?
You want to defend that?
I think I've come off a bit on that, mostly related to what I said around, like, I do really like the book a lot. So I think that's what's impacting me being like, no, it's a great movie because I really like this book. It's probably, like, cinematically, it is probably, no, not the best of the films. It does try to do a lot. It's an 800-page book. We talked about it. I very much appreciated Spencer's take that, like, and you echoed this too, Mesta, that like pushing through the tension is a bit of a slog once you've done it already. So the 13-year later rewatch makes it a little more of a slog when you're irritated by some of the things that are happening on screen for a significant portion of the film. But I don't know. I also like, I love Dumbledore's army and the kids meeting in a bar to like plot to take down the evil, shitty, like, you know, woman who's trying to take over their school. And the Room of Requirement is like a cute and fun idea where like we get to train and hang out together and like have our first kiss under the mistletoe. Like, there are very sweet elements to it that I also very much enjoy. And Umbridge gets carried off into the woods and you get to like, you know, celebrate that moment. And I don't know.
Just real quick to that point, like they tie it up in a very unbelievable way with like the newspaper article at the end of the movie being like, yeah, and she's like disbarred or whatever. And I was like, oh, she for sure would have been drawn and quartered by the centaurs, like right the second that she was out of
sight. It's too dark for the kids.
Yeah,
like, totally.
She would just truly be eaten.
She lived another 5 minutes tops after they took her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, in the books, they make it pretty clear that the centaurs live like outside of the control of the Ministry of Magic and outside of that world. Like, their laws do not apply to them. They're centaurs. So it's like very clear that that would have not have been what happened.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, no, I think to Spencer's point, it's a Potter movie in the same way that I'm like, yeah, I'll watch a Star Wars movie because I like living in that universe. Like, I'll always enjoy these films. But a lot of it is nostalgia. A lot of it is just an echo, a visual echo of what I like about the books, which were formative for me too.
To put a fine point on it, I think like I've seen I think I've seen this movie once before. That to me, this is like Goblet of Fire, this and Half-Blood Prince as movies I get very blurry to me. So I would hesitate to say that it's like, you know, objectively that I think it's the worst one, but it to me it's like it very well could be, just because it's just forgettable, it's long. I found myself there's just nothing that really like hooked me into it. It didn't really hold up for me.
All right. You guys want to come on again sometime?
Fuck yeah. We're just going to do the Harry Potter series in its entirety out of order.
Dude, that...
Yeah, I'll talk about a movie anytime you guys want.
I love it. Yeah, anytime we're doing a year that has a Harry Potter movie in it, we'll have you guys back.
Tight. I got some hot takes about Hermione kidnapping journalists.
Ah.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Tip of the iceberg.
Thanks for having us, boys.
Thanks for coming on. It was a genuine blast.
I'm sure your metrics are going to go through the roof after doing this episode, too. So
I can't wait. I can't wait to see us double up.
Speaking of, it's called the What If Podcast. If you haven't heard it already, do yourself a favor and look it up on wherever you get your podcast. It's a fantastic show. Spencer and Ryan are as is evident, just the best company to have in your ears. So we're grateful for you guys to share your talents with us today. And we wish you all the best.
That sounds ominous.
Hell yeah.
Why'd you laugh at that? Hope you fuckers are good.
Good luck, motherfucker.
It's back to war after this, my friends.
All right, boys. Thanks for having us.
All right.
Peace. All right, y'all. Cheers.
Peace.